My name is Sophie McNeil. I'm a journalist. Now I work for Human Rights Watch, and Fremantle is home. I really grew up on the Fremantle train line. My dad moved down there after my parents divorced, and my mum lived in Mount Hawthorne. So me and my three sisters would get dropped at West Leadable train station on Friday afternoons after school, and we'd have to catch the train down to Frio and then walk through town by ourselves to go meet Dad at Frio Oval, where he worked. He worked at the Dockers. And I say that I grew up in purple overalls. You know, we were in the cheer squad, and we used to go and sit behind the goals every game, and we'd have these massive things called floggers, which were the big purple, white, you know, and red and green back then. Big massive stream of things that you'd wave up and down when they got a goal. And I just remember, yes, there's a lot of days that didn't end so well for Fremantle back then, but we were always so enthusiastic, you know, and a lot of good memories of when the Dockers formed and the way, yeah, Fremantle came together, I guess, and really got behind this team. So I actually still have my purple overalls. I think when you grow up, you know, in this little corner of Australia, you become quite obsessed with the rest of the world because it's so far away, you know, the most isolated city. Is that technically true? I've never found it out, but it's always sounded very far away from everywhere, and it's always felt very far away from everywhere. So I think growing up, I was just fascinated by the rest of the world. I just had this burning desire to kind of get out there and see it for myself because I'd watched it on the SBS World News and it looked so exciting. And I guess I set my mind from a very young age to just kind of get the hell out. I left it 18 and didn't move back until I was 35. So when I first left Frio, I moved to Sydney. So I basically ran off and joined a newsroom. I was studying politics at Curtin, but got an offer to start filming some programs for SBS Insight, which back then was like the 7:30 report or something. And they did national stories from all over the country, and they were looking for people to shoot. And I just learned how to use these new mini DV video cameras that had come out. And yeah, they were that desperate for people who knew how to use this new technology that they hired an 18-year-old kid from birth. And I remember them saying, oh, you know, will you be in Sydney anytime soon? Can you meet with us? And I just kind of went, yeah, I'll be there next week, funny enough, and like booked a ticket to Sydney. And then, yeah, never came back. So kind of grew up in the SBS newsroom in Sydney. And then when I was 20, I moved to New York working for SBS. And then I went to Beirut and then Jerusalem, and then came back, met a boy at a barbecue when I came back for Christmas one year down in Dunsborough. And so hung around West Australia for a bit then when I had my first son, and ended up going back to the Middle East with the whole family and spending a few more years over there and a few more years in Sydney, and then arrived back in Fremantle and, yeah, moved into my house the day that the lockdown started in March 2020. So it was actually perfect timing. When I arrived in the Middle East in 2015 to be the ABC's Middle East correspondent, you know, the region was just on fire. President Assad in Syria had been bombing his own people for several years, and Russia had just stepped in to help him. And so there was just daily massacres and barrel bombs and children starved to death on purpose in certain towns across Syria as Assad tried to take back opposition-held areas. The Saudis were bombing Yemen, you know, the richest country in the Middle East, bombing the poorest country into submission. There've just been another war in Gaza where more than 500 children had been killed in Israeli airstrikes. It just seemed everywhere you looked, there were war crimes. It was just horrific. And if you come from a place like Frio, then it's always very easy to keep at the forefront of your mind that, you know, you're the lucky one, right? You've got an Australian passport. I'm a young white woman. So no matter how scared I was, if we were on like a really dangerous road in Yemen or, you know, something dodgy was going down in Gaza or whatever, you always just remembered that actually, you know, I've got a ticket out. Whereas all over the Middle East, I'd meet people who were trapped. You know, there was no escape. You know, you couldn't get a flight out of Yemen. You know, the Saudis closed the airspace. Gaza, there was a blockade. You know, you literally, there's 15 meter high concrete walls. You can't get out if you try. You'd meet other reporters on the road who never seemed to get scared or anxious, you know, that it was all, it's a bit of a game. You know, you put your flak jacket on and you hang out with the soldiers. And I hated that kind of journalism, and I always strove to go and hang out with the women and the children, and I didn't like embedding with soldiers and making it all seem like a military kind of game. I think my approach was always just to try and hang out with people who were trying to go about their normal everyday lives. One thing that would sometimes come up was that I'd kind of go out of my way to try and help people on the road, you know, because you were just meant to be this robot. You're meant to just kind of fly in, go to stand on that beach in Turkey, and there's boatloads of refugees coming towards you, and you've got, you know, one day film a 7:30 report, find this family, do ABC 24, write an online story, do the cross with the news. Like, you weren't meant to have any time to feel anything. And I always tried to challenge that because I didn't want to live with these thoughts of, oh, if only I'd helped that person, or if only I'd done that. Because you're always meeting people who just needed a little bit of, yeah, help or attention that would have really improved their life. So, you know, we met this refugee on a beach in Greece, and we were meant to be trying to find a family to film for 7:30 report, but instead we helped this 65-year-old refugee, Nazir, who couldn't walk properly. He had a cane. He was from Syria. He'd lost his wife and kids, and it was in the middle of the refugee crisis in the summer of 2015, and he had no kind of hope of getting to this the capital of Lesbos, Mytilene, by himself. You could only walk there. There was no buses or anything at that stage. And he was just kind of trapped on this beach crying when we came across him. And, you know, technically I was meant to be doing all these other things for the ABC that day, but, you know, there was no way I was going to just leave Nazir sitting there on the beach. So, you know, we put him in our car and gave him a lift and put him up at a hotel and then took him to the Red Cross to try and find his family. And yeah, I did get in trouble later with my producers because they were like, oh, you know, you shouldn't have put the team in that position. You should have, you know, focused on the work. But the thing is, we got a really good story out of it. We told Nazir's story of what it was like, you know, to be in the middle of this incredible exodus and how lost and desperate he was. But, you know, we also put our efforts into finding his family. We found them and, you know, we went to Germany and filmed their reunion. So yeah, I always would go out of my way, I guess, to be a human on the road. You know, I always say I'm a humanitarian at heart. Journalism was one way that I thought I wanted to change the world. But then, you know, I actually left journalism because I was sick of just telling people what was wrong with the world. I wanted to start working on some of the solutions. So that's why I've now moved into more advocacy. You know, I work now for Human Rights Watch. I felt like I had to put my money where my mouth was and go and do some of the doing rather than just tell you what was so wrong about everything. I often do talks at schools or like Rotary clubs or all kinds of organizations where people want me to talk about reporting in the Middle East. And at the end, there's always questions. And the first question is always like, how did you work on so many, you know, tragic issues for so many years? How did you keep going on or stay inspired? And I always say, well, you know, I'm a Dockers fan. I'm used to kind of this, you know, despair. I've got photos of me like wearing my Dockers gear all over the world. When my boys were small, I'd dress them in Dockers gear. And I've got this photo of us like overlooking the old city in Jerusalem with Al-Aqsa Mosque in the background. And we're all wearing our Dockers gear because it was like September 2015. And this was the year we were going to like actually win because, you know, I'd lived through that pain of 2013. And then, of course, we lost and it was devastating. Yeah, it's what I kind of do to tune out and have fun and try and relax. But yeah, it's never that relaxing being a Dockers fan. So it probably fits my personality because I'm not very good at relaxing anyway. Well, one of the issues that I work with now with Human Rights Watch is the climate emergency. And that's partly why I left journalism, because I wanted to work on this. What I've come to realize is that this is the human rights crisis facing me and my children and all the people that I love. And I think we need to start thinking of it in that way. It's a massive challenge. You know, it's way harder than what I used to do. You know, war correspondent in the Middle East, really, honestly, it's way harder trying to work in climate and get these wins. I always had a half-packed suitcase in the corner of my room. And for the first time ever, like pretty much since I left WA, I didn't have to go anywhere. You know, I didn't have to travel. I got to stay in one place. And so I planted roses and I saw the flowers bloom and I dug up a whole garden and planted all these natives. And yeah, now they're like up to my waist. And it's been a really lovely thing to just, yeah, be. It's a different kind of existence. But yeah, I haven't had like FOMO that like I thought I would being trapped here. I've quite actually enjoyed it and it's made me appreciate what we have. And I don't think we do that enough.